Hi, and welcome to the Well Read Podcast, a bi-weekly discussion on books and reading. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Anne.
And we are librarians at the Beaufort County Library in South Carolina. And this week we have a special guest returning to us. Tracy Cox is here.
Hello, thank you.
Hello, Tracy. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
This week we are going to be discussing the Big Read program, which Tracy's going to give some more information about. It's something the library is doing in January and February. And the book we have chosen is Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. So we're going to give a little bit of information about the book, a little bit of information about the Big Read, and see where that takes us. So, Tracy, could you tell us a little bit about the Big Read?
Sure. The Big Read is a program of the National Endowment for the Arts. It broadens our understanding of the world, our communities, and ourselves through the joy of sharing a good book. It's managed by Arts Midwest, and this initiative offers grants to support innovative community-wide reading programs designed around a single book. And our library system was a recipient of one of these grants, and we chose to focus on the book Their Eyes Were Watching God. We are in the midst of our celebrations now with dozens of programs and discussions going on throughout our five library branches, and that goes throughout the end of February.
Good, thank you. So if you're not familiar with Their Eyes Were Watching God, it is a book that came out in 1937, and it begins with our eyes, the reader's eyes, being fixed on a woman who returns from burying the dead. It was written in only 7 weeks while on a Guggenheim Fellowship in Haiti. Zora Neale Hurston's novel chronicles the journey of Janie Mae Crawford from her grandmother's plantation shack to Logan Killick's farm to all black Eatonville to the Everglades until a tragedy brings her back to Eatonville. From this vantage point, Janie narrates her life story to her best friend, Phoebe Watson, satisfying the oldest human longing, self-revelation. Forced to marry for money at 16, Janie at first believes that love automatically comes with marriage. Unable to endure her mule-like servitude and the desecration of her dreams, she spontaneously leaves Logan for Joe Starks, a handsome, ambitious man, determined to put her on a pedestal once he becomes mayor of Eatonville. After enduring a mostly joyless 20-year marriage to him, Janie finally meets a young, uneducated wastrel named Tea Cake. With him, she thinks she can find genuine love for the first time, but fate intervenes and Janie fears she may have to choose between his safety and her own. Although the novel is not an autobiography, Hurston once reflected that it is at its heart a love story, inspired by the real love affair of her life. She also fictionalized another important incident in her life in the novel. In 1929, Hurston survived a 5-day hurricane in the Bahamas, getting herself and another family out of a house moments before it began to collapse. Hurston's conviction that Black culture is valuable, unique, and worthy of preservation comes through in Their Eyes Were Watching God via its harmonious blend of folklore and Black idiom. In Janie Mae Crawford, Hurston rejects 19th and early 20th century stereotypes for women and creates a protagonist who, though silenced for most of her life, ultimately finds her own voice. Anne, do you want to give us some background information on Zora Neale Hurston?
Sure. She was born in 1891 in Alabama, but her family moved to Eatonville, Florida, where the book is set, when she was young. And this was, as Hallie said, it was the first all-Black incorporated town in the U.S., and so that upbringing was very influential on her. She never saw examples of Black people being considered inferior, but she was surrounded by people who were achieving their ambitions in a very successful community, and that really informed her writing later in life. She left Eatonville when she was 14 after her mother's death and her father's remarriage, and she eventually went to Howard University in Washington, D.C., and then moved to New York City in 1925. While she was there, she studied anthropology at Barnard College under Dr. Franz Boas, who was considered the father of American anthropology, and he encouraged her to do anthropological fieldwork in the South, and the study led to a large output of written work, which includes novels, articles, essays, folklore collections, and her autobiography. She was married 3 times, but her love affair with a 23-year-old man named Percy Punter inspired her writing of Their Eyes Were Watching God when he asked her to give up her writing career in order to marry him. And he refused to, or she refused to do this, but she tried to record her feelings for him in the book. Like Hallie said, it was published in 1937, and it was initially criticized by several male authors who were involved in the Harlem Renaissance. They felt that her writing wasn't focused enough on the social struggles of Black Americans, and that she needed to incorporate that more into her writing, which she disagreed with. She struggled financially despite her constant writing and her political views, and her issues with these male writers alienated her from other Black writers of the time. So she eventually died penniless and was buried in an unmarked grave and was nearly forgotten for many years until the writer Alice Walker used some of Hurston's anthropological writings in an article, which led her to read Their Eyes Were Watching God. She decided that she would find Hurston's grave herself and did that and bought a marker for it and then wrote an article in the magazine Ms. called In Search of Zora Neale Hurston. And around the same time, the literary scholar Robert Hemingway was working on a biography of Hurston, and these two things combined made her brought her back to mainstream knowledge and sort of solidified her place as one of our great American authors. So it's a very cool story. I didn't know all of that background either. That I was very, in my mind, she just is part of the American canon, and then to know that she was forgotten and no one even knew where she was buried was just crazy to me.
It's interesting how many authors that we consider classic authors or authors of classic books were not that famous in their time or well known in their time, and just over.
Well, and she was, but then she was forgotten. Yeah, that just seems strange to me. Yeah. So I think Alice Walker talked about how I'm totally paraphrasing this. I'm not able to quote people at all, but that shouldn't forget our geniuses, and that this was a genius writer that deserves to be read. So, so it's a very interesting life story.
Well, okay, that will lead us to our first question. We all read this book. Do you think it's a book that deserves to be read now, you know, almost 100 years after it was originally published?
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
I do.
So I listened to it as an audiobook, and you did too, right,
did,
Tracy?
Yes,
and then you read it as a print book. Is that correct, Anne?
I wished I had read it as an audiobook.
Okay. Do you want to mention why?
Yeah, it's full of dialect, which is sort of the intention of Hurston to record this way of speaking because she was an anthropologist and that was really important to her. But for me, as I was reading, I found that I was reading one word at a time, and it was really hard to get the flow until later in the book. And I think that, like, I started to notice some of the differences in how different characters talked. Like, Joe has a very different dialect than Janie does, but that took me a while to pick up on. And I think if I had listened to it, I would have been better able to see that. So I think this would definitely benefit from being listened to.
Yeah, I actually picked it up in print with full intentions of reading it and got maybe 5 pages into it before I thought, I think I'm going to switch to the audiobook because I have a hard time the same way with dialect. It does not flow well for me if I can't get into the rhythm of it. And for some reason, I just couldn't. So I switched to the audiobook, which Ruby Dee narrates, and she does a fantastic job. Each character is a distinct voice and a distinct person and with a personality that comes through just by the voice. And so I think I got the book, for lack of a better way of saying that, more by listening to it than if I had read it. Because if I'd read it, the voice in my head would have been my own versus somebody else saying those words. So I think it made me appreciate the book more to listen to it than now. I think I could probably go back and read it and probably get something out of it. But the first time around, I appreciated that I could listen to somebody tell me the story and say those words that in written form would have been hard for me, I think, to read in a good solid flow.
Right.
I think the listening to the audiobook was an excellent experience also, but the where there might be a disservice is when the narrator chimes in with these, like, you know, profound thoughts. You really can't savor the words on the page. And when you're hearing them, they're beautiful, but if I were reading it, I would be able to, like, reread it and really enjoy those.
That's true.
Those thoughts.
Yeah, you can't kind of mark the passages that are pause to reflect on because you're moving right on to the next part of the story.
Yes, and after going through the quotes on different websites and stuff, I was like, wow, I must have missed that when I listened to it. That's a beautiful quote about life, and just I love those little narrator chimes in, when the narrator chimes in.
Yeah, there was one point where I was listening and I was in my car and there was something and I was listening and I must have just zoned out for a minute or two because then I came, which I actually listen to a lot of audiobooks. So that's not something that happens, but it doesn't happen very often, I should say. But then when it does, usually you can just kind of jump right back into the story.
Right.
And we were in, like, a totally different part of the story. And I thought, wait, what transition did I miss? And because I was in my car, it wasn't easy for me to I was listening through with Bluetooth on my phone. Like, it was hard to kind of skip back to where I had lost track. With a book, you don't have that problem. But overall, I would say that listening to it was a good experience, especially for the first time, not knowing anything about the story. When I read a book, typically I don't know any synopsis right. or anything like mm-hmm. that.
It's a really compact book. She mm-hmm. fits a lot into mm-hmm. not very many pages. And I felt that when I was reading it, like everything was chosen so carefully that there wasn't any wasted mm-hmm. story or wasted mm-hmm. space in the book. It just was all meant to mean something. And I think one of the things that I was able to pick up on as I was reading it, that I was glad that for once my college training sort of kicked in there, was the use of symbolism. And we're not going to go too much into those things, but there's a few things to pay attention to, like the way that the author talks about the horizon, and that comes up many times in the book. She talks about a pear tree many times in the book. Janie's hair is very symbolic in the book. And so there are lots of things that are, just add this richness to the story. So it isn't just reading for a plot, but mm-hmm. reading for meaning and mm-hmm. meaning for metaphor. And I have to say, it's been a long time since I've read a book like that. Mm-hmm. I think I tend to read a lot of genre fiction, and mm-hmm. while those are great and they can be beautifully written and have a lot of great meaning, I haven't read something with this much depth in a while. And mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that.
I agree. It was very refreshing to read. I remember telling my husband, like, wow, it's just been such a long time since I've read a book of kind of classic literature.
Right.
I'm usually reading like these, you know, interesting like survival stories. Yeah. And, these, you know, and it's like, as, you know, those are awesome. But this book just made me kind of pause, like, mm-hmm. wow, okay, there's a difference there.
Right. You definitely feel like the richness of mm-hmm. a book like this compared to some of the, in our last episode, we read Outside of Our Comfort Zone, like yeah. a typical mystery that's in a series. Like, some, there's just a richness to the language and the mm-hmm. the way she puts together the plot, the structure, everything right. about it felt very well thought out.
Right. This is one, this doesn't happen to me all that often anymore, but this is a book where I wished I had bought a copy of it instead of taking it out from the library, because mm. there are all kinds of things I wanted to write mm-hmm. and things I wanted to underline. Like mm-hmm. Tracy was talking about the richness of the language mm. that you just sort of want to savor that and mm. go back to it at a certain point. And I yeah. felt like, oh, I've got to turn this back in.
Yeah.
And I kept grabbing a pen to write something in the book or to underline something yeah. and then realized, no, I can't do
well,
this.
Well, and I think that this was such a good selection for the big read, because this is one that really benefits from being able to talk about and learn yeah. about the book. It's almost like when you're in college or in high school or taking a class of some sort, that you sort of need the explanation. You need to hear about Zora Neale Hurston's life. You need right. to hear, put it in context. You need to pay attention to the symbolism. You can't just mm-hmm. sit back and listen or read it. And for pure entertainment's mm-hmm. sake, there is a reason that it's chosen for something like this, because there's so much more to talk about than just what's on the page mm-hmm. as a story.
So many little nuggets of wisdom mm-hmm. within the right. pages. Mm-hmm. Like in promoting this project, I would go through and, you know, the websites that pull out the quotes from the book, and we try to put like an artsy background on a quote to really highlight mm-hmm. some beautiful passages in the book. And it's like, there's so many. How do you choose from all of these?
Tracy, do you want to talk about some of the programs that we have going on along with Big Read? If you're interested in picking up the book, we have plenty of copies in our library system. You can pick it up and read it and join us for some of these programs that'll help enhance your reading experience.
Sure, yeah. In mid-February, we have authors Dori Sanders and Dinah Johnson coming to talk to the St. Helena Branch Library and the Bluffton Branch Library. We've got storytellers, lots of book discussions, film showings, book discussions with Dr. Gloria Holmes, who's an expert on Zora Neale Hurston. And also, the entire Big Read program at Beaufort County Library wraps up at the Ruby Lee's Restaurant in Hilton Head. And that is a swing party with the very local famous musicians Marlena Smalls and LaVon Stevens will be serenading you, and you will also have an opportunity to eat and books for take home and just all kinds of fun happening at that event.
So Hallie talked about the how she enjoyed the framework of the book and the structure, and that was something I thought was really cool too, that there's this storytelling tradition yes. that you see in the book uh-huh. With Janie choosing to tell her story to her friend Phoebe, and we're hearing her story also through Zora Neale Hurston's perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think in the last episode I talked about how much I love folklore, and that to me seemed like a really great example of a storytelling tradition that's mm-hmm. brought into a literary context where mm-hmm. you get to see how important the sharing of stories mm-hmm. and the sharing of life experiences is for people. I really appreciated seeing how people use stories to sort of inform their lives and to yeah. inform their experiences. And mm-hmm. I thought that was beautifully done.
Well, and I always like the books that the person, after they've lived all of these events, going
yeah.
and telling their story, because you know that it's filtered through time and experience.
Right.
And so the stories that they're telling, there's a purpose to why mm-hmm. they're telling the story that way. I always like that framework in a book, because as you're reading, you sort of get swept up and this is what's happening. And then you kind of remind yourself, no, this is the story that
right.
she is telling to right. her friend after all of this has happened.
Well, and she sort of alludes to a that idea. There's a part where Tea Cake is telling something to Janie mm-hmm. and he says something about he was glad she took it the way he had intended. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly thought, oh my word, storytelling is all manipulation.
Right.
It's all intending on someone taking what you want from it right. and not necessarily just facts. Mm-hmm. And I just loved that about the book.
Well, in the one of the reviews suggested that Phoebe is the ideal character for Janie to tell her story, because Phoebe kind of agrees with Janie and therefore mm-hmm. the reader agrees with Janie's right. adventure that, like, yes, she was in the right, you know, all these things happened to her and she came out stronger in the end. But what mm-hmm. if Phoebe didn't feel that
right.
way? Like
right.
what if she said, you know, some negative things about right. Janie's adventure? Would the reader feel different about it? So I never really thought of Phoebe's character in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is very important, that she was a good listener and
yes.
non-judgmental.
Right, because there's the impression that a lot of the other people that surround Janie are judgmental
right.
and are judgmental of her and her life and what she has done. So there's it's very purposeful why mm-hmm. Phoebe is the one hearing the story and mm-hmm. not some of these other people.
And yeah. it also, it's like she's coming home to Phoebe, almost like she's yeah. been searching mm-hmm. for her village, so yeah. to say, of people that accept her and love her. And then mm-hmm. the story, it just kind of yeah. ends with her telling her best friend. So mm-hmm. maybe it's all about friendship.
Yeah. All right. So before we wrap up, is there anything else you wanted to talk about that struck you about this book?
I was really struck by how much the book was about women and what it means to be a woman. Mm-hmm. I never read this in high school. I think I was gone the year that we read all of our American lit classes or lit books. So I just have a big gaping hole in my life. But I had always perceived this book as a book about race, which it really is mm-hmm. not very much. There are a few instances where race becomes an issue in the book, but for the most part, it's about her identity as a woman. Mm-hmm. And I thought that as a woman reading it, there were a lot of things that were really wise and really mm-hmm. beautiful to read. And I think if a man were to read it, I think there's a lot of things that would probably be illuminating mm-hmm. to men on how women view each other and view themselves and view men. Mm-hmm. There's so much good meat in this book.
I know, there really is. It was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect when I was going into mm-hmm. it, and there's so much there. So I would definitely recommend, if we have piqued your interest at all, to pick it up and give it a shot. Come to one of our programs if you live here locally, and so you can get the most out of this book, Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. We're going to take a break real fast. We'll be right back with what we're reading this week. And what are you reading this week?
I read Night, Night, Sleep Tight by Hallie Efron.
Good name.
I know. So Hallie Efron is the youngest daughter of the famous Hollywood screenwriters Phoebe and Henry Efron, and she's the younger sister of Nora, Amy, and Delia Efron. So she's from this very, very famous family and is famous in her own right as a pretty prolific suspense writer. She grew up in Hollywood due to her parents' career, and so she has all of these experiences that ended up inspiring this book. It starts with the murder of a down-on-his-luck screenwriter named Arthur Unger in 1986 Los Angeles, and his daughter, Deirdre, who's the main character, actually discovers his body when she comes to help him put his estate up for sale. She discovers it in the swimming pool, and she just assumes that this was an accident, but the police believe otherwise, and they start to suspect Deirdre of the crime because there's just not much to hang an alibi on for her. So Deirdre is put in charge of Arthur's literary estate by his will and begins to find strange things among his papers, including an ever-published memoir. But a fire breaks out in his office while everyone is away from the house, so Deirdre knows that there's something else that's going on here besides her assumption that he had just died by accident. And she knows that there's something else that someone doesn't want her to find. So as she's reading his memoir, she starts to suspect that her father's death is somehow tied to a murder that took place in the 1960s when her best friend, Joellen Nichols, actually confessed to killing her movie star mother's boyfriend in self-defense. And Deirdre realizes that she was actually there herself when this happened, but she has no memory of when this took place. She has no memory of the night at all. So this is a great setup for suspense novels. Yeah, so this definitely. this is very intriguing. And the plot is actually based on the murder of the actress Lana Turner's boyfriend by her daughter. Yeah. And Hallie Efron grew up around the corner from where this happened when she was a kid. This happened when I think she was 10 years old, and she was very struck by this and very intrigued by this murder. And as you sort of get fixated on things when you're a kid, or sometimes when you're an adult, then this was really something that stuck with her through her whole life. So she actually came last week to speak at my branch, mm-hmm. which was a really great program. It just sort of fell into my lap. I didn't have to really do anything. It's just she was coming to town to do some research and offered to do a program for me, and I said, sure, that sounds amazing. So she said during the program that this book started out as a memoir. Basically, she had started collecting stories of her childhood and couldn't really come up with a way to put them together, and then it just sort of turned into its own suspense novel, which is typical for what she normally writes. So she was really entertaining. She had really great insight into what it's like to grow up in Hollywood, and talked about stories that normal everyday people just would never have any experience with. So I would recommend, if anyone has a chance to see her while she's promoting any of her books, to go hear her speak, because she's a really great presenter. And I also have to say, I really loved the ending of this book, which I won't give away, but I read a lot of suspense novels and it takes a lot to surprise me, and I ended up squealing with happiness at the end of this book because I was so pleased with what she did with it. So I thought it was terrific. So it's called Night Night Sleep Tight by Hallie Efron.
Does she live locally?
Lives in Massachusetts. Huh. And for some reason, and she was setting her next book in Beaufort.
Oh, you told me that.
So, yeah, so she just decided to come. But I think when she started doing research, there were some things that I don't think she's going to call it Beaufort now, but it sounded like she was very inspired by all of our local crazy stuff that goes on. So it sounds very neat. So it's something to look forward to.
Yeah. So what I'm reading this week is Boy Snow Bird by Helen Oyeyemi. And this is continuing my theme from last episode about reading outside of my comfort zone a little bit. I'm trying to broaden the way I read. So there was a list I came across on the Huffington Post from a few years ago about 21 books that from the last 5 years that every woman should read. And I'd actually read a fair number of them, but this was one on there I hadn't read, so I picked it up. It is a retelling of Snow White set in 1950s Massachusetts and using race as determinant of the idea of fairest of them all versus beauty. It is about a woman named Boy Novak who runs away from her cruel father in New York City to the small town of Flax Hill, Massachusetts, where people make beautiful things. So it's kind of like a storybook fairy tale setting right there. You know, it's not a realistic town where just that's how you survive, is making beautiful things. She meets and marries a widower, becoming the stepmother to his beautiful daughter, Snow. And when Boy gets pregnant and has a baby, she names it Bird. And it becomes apparent that the family she is married into are black, but they've been passing as white. And the baby is dark skinned. And so the secret is out that they have been passing as white. And
Very interesting.
Interesting. So instead of casting out the dark skinned daughter, Boy casts out Snow, the beautiful, fair-skinned daughter, to a different... And so she's kind of like the evil stepmother casting out Snow. And I don't really want to say too much more about it because there are kind of some twists, but it's about beauty and identity and race and family and kind of how you see yourself in your family. It's got a very dreamlike quality. I found it kind of spellbinding. Like, I was just kind of going along with the story and taking it in, and it wasn't until after I finished that I could sit back and kind of think about it. Yeah. Until then, I was just going along with it. It's very moody, and I would definitely recommend it. It was interesting, different from what I usually read, but in a great, thoughtful way. It's Boy Snow Bird by Helen Oyeyemi.
And that's got kind of a literary tone to
it. It does have a literary tone. So, yeah, and I didn't realize it was I knew it was a retelling of Snow White, but until I finished it, I had to sit back and be like, wait, how is this a retelling of Snow White? It's not a direct comparison to Snow White. It's just kind of the overtone of a fairy tale and kind of like the original fairy tales that weren't very happy fairy tales.
Yeah.
But it was really good. Very good. I would be eager to read something else by her because she had a unique way of writing that I enjoyed a lot. So we don't really need to talk about what books we talked about this week because we only have three. Unless, Tracy, did you have a book that you're reading right now that you wanted to talk about?
I am reading a book.
Oh, you want to talk about it?
Tell us.
Okay, it's going to be really brief.
Okay, that's okay. Good.
Okay, I'm reading The Revenant. I'm listening to The Revenant, which I think might be better. It's really good. Really? The narrator, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but he sounds like Leonardo DiCaprio, who plays the main character in the movie that just came out. So I haven't seen the movie yet, but as I'm reading or listening to this book, I'm picturing the characters as they've been cast. So I think Tom Hardy plays the character of Fitzgerald. I think he's a bad guy, but I'm not there yet. So the overall premise is it's the 1820s or 1830s, I think. It has to do with survival, a very graphic grizzly bear attack on the main character. And it's his journey of revenge and survival. So that's all I'm going to disclose. Yeah. But it's really a true story.
Is that right?
I think it's based on a true story. We don't quite know. Yeah, but they're fur trappers, and there's Indian attacks, and just trying to survive, which is right up my alley.
That's awesome.
That Taylor enjoy, made so.
For you. Yeah. Well, thank you, and thank you for coming and joining us for our discussion today. If you want to get in touch with us to give us feedback or a suggestion on a topic you'd like us to discuss, you can email us at wellreadpod@gmail.com or find us on our brand new Facebook page or on Twitter at wellreadpodcast. Please rate and review us on iTunes or your other podcast provider of choice. Our podcast is engineered by Adam Farver. Our theme music is Kitten by Poddington Bear. We keep our show notes at beaufortcountylibrary.org/wellread, where you can find a listing of every book we talked about in this episode. If you'd like a book recommendation list tailored specifically for you, please go to beaufortcountylibrary.org/mynextbook and take a brief survey on what type of books you like. And you'll need a BCL library card in order to use that service. We hope you will join us for some of our big read events, that you'll come and pick up the book Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston and come and talk to us about it. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading.